Welcome again, soloists. This is a very important edition of Solo Pilot. We cross now, immediately therefore, to old material from Lindsay Perrigo.
Good afternoon, Kyle Ora. Welcome to the Politically Incorrect Show on the Free Speech Network, Radio Pacific, for Tuesday, August 10. Proudly sponsored by Tuariki Tobacco Limited, the show that says bugger the politicians and bureaucrats and all the other bossy boot busybodies who try to run our lives with our money. It stands tall for free enterprise, achievement, profit and excellence against the state worshippers in our midst. It stands above all for the most sacred thing in the universe, the liberty of the human individual. This afternoon I want to reveal a threat to the environment greater than global warming or ozone depletion, greater than genetic modification or irradiation of food, a threat about which information has been deliberately withheld by big-moneyed vested interests. The dangers posed by this substance are so great that I believe it should be banned immediately and totally. At the very least, it should be strictly controlled. I have crossed political boundaries and drawn it to the attentions of Ms. Bunkle and Ms. Fitzsimons, who agree with my estimate of the gravity of the situation, and who will take urgency in the House to have a state of emergency declared, while Parliament, Civil Defence, and the New Zealand Army devise ways of disposing of this lethal hazard. Here's what the government hasn't told you, because the big corporations don't want you to know it. Concentrations of this menace in the Earth's atmosphere nowadays are ominously higher than they were when the pristine Earth first formed. Indeed, several suppressed reports by United Nations scientists are known to have concluded that concentrations can reach up to 20% of the air we breathe. The implications of this are truly frightening when you consider that, because of the damage it causes to human cells, this substance is the leading cause of aging and death in human beings. Plants are programmed to reject this insidious chemical outright, but it nonetheless is slowly insinuating itself into the molecular structure of most rocks and minerals on the Earth's surface, making the very surface of the Earth on which we all live lighter and weaker. If action is not taken, the entire Earth's surface could simply crumble into the sea. An indication of its corrosive effects is the billions of dollars of property damage for which it is responsible by destroying the metallic structure of iron and many other metals. Especially alarmingly, it has been shown to bind with the hemoglobin in human blood, causing a change in the three-dimensional structure of the actual hemoglobin protein and raising fears that blood itself could dissolve into a crumbly powder at any moment in one's sleeping or waking hours. Additionally, this microscopic Frankenstein facilitates the formation of carbon dioxide and a number of other chemicals which cause environmental damage. It has been implicated strongly as an essential factor in every arson ever committed. It has been found in the tumours of terminal cancer patients. It is a constant constituent of the toxic gases emitted from human and other animal rectums in the process known as breaking wind, or in the vernacular, farting. Ladies and gentlemen, the future of the planet, possibly of the solar system, possibly even of the entire universe itself, hangs in the balance. We need not, must not, wait for further evidence. The perils of an action are too great. The Ministry for the Environment must galvanize itself into action. Parliament must immediately pass the Bunkle Fitzsimons Bill banning the substance and declaring a 500-year moratorium on any research involving its use. All concerned Alliance and Green Party supporters who can write are urged to rally round and write to their MPs. Mother Earth must be protected at all costs from the plague of oxygen. Now, Jewish bankers and big corporations will tell you that oxygen is good for you. We must expose their propaganda for what it is, a conspiracy to keep you alive so they can continue their ruthless exploitation of you. This globally important public service announcement is posted on my website, www.freeradical.co.nz, The Politically Incorrect Show, taking the P out of pea brains, 309-3099.
Thank you, Lindsay, and welcome again, soloists, to the Solo Pilot Show, our attempt to distribute objectivist thinking via podcasting. I'm Rick Giles, and this is Solo Pilot Show number 3. Possibly you're expecting the introduction music by now, and it's been put off for two very good reasons. Firstly, Duncan Bain's hardwood floor made sharp impact with his external hard drive while it was flying through the air, so that our musical accompaniment sounds now like this. Secondly, I wanted to get right to Lindsay's PI editorial so it would have full effect. The employment of anti-thought, scary language in Lindsay's editorial is also seen at work in the subject of today's show. For today, we talk of oxygen and hydrogen in compound form, which in real life truly is a crisis, specifically in Australia. Now, it's almost time to hear from the architect of this podcast, Duncan Bain, but before we do, I've got a letter to the editor to read out. Why can't I buy as much water as I can afford and use it for whatever purpose I wish? If I want to spend my money on petrol and drive around aimlessly burning it, no law stops me, and private enterprise builds more infrastructure, roads, to help me do so. If I want to spend my money on air conditioning and run it night and day, no law stops me, and private enterprise builds more infrastructure, generators, to help me do so. If I want to water my flowers or wash my car with a hose, the government forbids it and refuses to build enough infrastructure to let me choose how to spend my money on a renewable resource. Where would you rather have your money spent? Is it better to spend millions on the Commonwealth Games, or would you rather have the reassurance of improved water storages and some flowers in February? Are we too infantile to be allowed to choose how to spend our money? This was the lead letter to the editor of the Melbourne Age on the 26th of December 2003, attributed to Professor Robin Shaw of Deakin University. He was invited but declined to appear on our podcast. Unfortunately, he's concerned that it would lead to strife for him if that were to be the case, but we've got Duncan Bain.
Water. Our planet is covered with the stuff. In fact, as Bill Bryson observed, visiting aliens would be more likely to call our planet water than Earth. Our very lives depend on having a good supply of the stuff to drink. And to thrive, we need more in order that we might bathe, wash our cars, and run our factories. And yet, we manage to be in the middle of a water shortage. It's the 21st century. We have put men on the moon nearly 40 years ago. We drilled oil out of the ground from offshore deposits and pipe and ship it halfway around the globe. One of the biggest killers of the poor is obesity. Yet, when it comes to water, we revert to the level of savages, sitting around staring intently at the sky, praying for rain, lest we die from thirst. So, at least here in Australia, when the rains fail... Rains fail? In Australia? Really? The government starts rationing water, which should in itself be a clue as to the root cause of the problem. Yes, they ration the most plentiful resource in the world. We can't wash our cars on certain days, we can't water our gardens, and we're discouraged from taking baths. Apparently, in some parts of Australia, you'll actually get personal visits from representatives of the local water board if your water consumption is atypically high. So why is so little clean drinking water produced when there's so much demand? Why are the methods of production so closely tied to a single source, rain? The answer is that no one profits by producing drinking water. The producer is the state, meaning that the cheapest methods of production are used and the prices are held artificially low as a form of election bribe, thereby encouraging greater consumption than production.
So, who do they think they are, these water authorities? What makes them tick? And why do they see the need to ration such a plentiful resource? How is it that the world can have more than enough oil, hamburgers, and Nike, but run short of such a vital, and such a plentiful, and such a cheap resource? I thought I'd put these questions and more to my local water authority. I thought I'd do that, but it turns out that it made for a very boring interview. So, I made it into a montage featuring news clips and reactions from the Australian news media.
For information on water restrictions, please press 2. If you are buying...
Level 3 mandatory water restrictions now apply to all customers in Sydney, Blue Mountains and the Illawarra. The following briefly outlines Level 3 restrictions.
Today was supposed to be the day, but as the clock ticks past the deadline for Victoria to sign up to the Commonwealth's $10 billion plan for the Murray-Darling Basin, both sides are saying, well, nothing. The Victorian government has submitted the amendments it wants made to the legislation, and the federal government is going through the paperwork. After months of bickering, the distinct lack of comment is leaving others to look on in confusion, trying to read the signs.
Handheld hosing of lawns and gardens and drip irrigation is now only allowed on the following 2 days, Wednesdays and Sundays, before 10 a.m. and after 4 p.m.
The worst drought in 100 years just won't go away. In fact, nearly 40% of agricultural land in Australia is still in exceptional drought. Has it affected you? Is it just that you can't wash your car with a hose, or you can't water your garden, or has it turned your whole life upside down? For some young people, the drought's changed everything. Being sacked from your job, not being able to go to university, having to spend every spare minute helping on the farm, or just learning to avoid Dad because he's not himself anymore. It seems crazy that all that and more can happen just because it hasn't rained enough, but, you know, that's just the way it is.
Our nation is in the worst time of drought that we have seen for generations. For many, suicide and depression are a very real part of everyday life. Would you please join us in prayer for our land and our farmers? Pray that rain will reach the drought-stricken areas. Pray for our nation's leaders, that they will have wisdom as they lead us through this time. We declare that God is sovereign, and our dependence is in Him alone.
We should all pray for rain, because the situation for the farmers of Australia in the irrigation area of this country in the Murray-Darling Basin is critical, and we must all hope and pray there is rain.
Despite rains that caused floods in 2 states and gave grain growers in the east the best autumn break in a decade, the drought isn't over.
Farmers worry the move will cripple their already devastated industry, everything from dairy farms to crops to the wine harvest. Effects of the drought are being felt across the board. It's expected to knock off as much as 1% of Australia's $789 billion economy.
Yesterday, the federal government committed a further $350 million package for drought relief for farmers. The drought is the worst one in 100 years, and agricultural industry used about 3/4 of the water in Australia. So, as the driest continent on Earth, and with the looming threat of climate change, should we reassess what crops are suitable in Australia? Should the industry take the lead and opt out of crops that need a lot of water, like cotton and
Australia
rice?
Australia has plenty of water while the South's been in drought. Could we use the ocean to even things out? It might sound a bit far-fetched, but one Queensland scientist believes that a scheme to float large volumes of fresh water in plastic bladders down the Australian east coast could work.
No other watering systems or sprinklers are to be used at any time. No filling of new or renovated pools greater than a 10,000 litre capacity, except with a permit from Sydney Water. No hosing of hard...
So something like 750 families per week are moving to Perth, and together with that we've got a reduction in rainfall and a reduction in runoff. So we need more water. We're absolutely running out.
Okay, well the bath, depending on if it's half full, you can use between 50 to 120 litres.
And that helps explain why the Water Corporation turned to the nearby Indian Ocean to help solve its problem.
And it all depends, I guess, on the type of shower and the shower head and so on, but on average you can use anywhere between 40 to 250 litres for an average of 8 minutes.
I hope in the course of listening to this podcast you've seen the solution to the water shortage isn't more state control. The solution is to treat water like any other vital commodity, oil, gas, or hamburgers, and privatise it. Once people can make money by providing water, the floodgates will open. Suddenly water consumption will be good. Desalination plants will be opened, and with them, new power plants. Driven by the desire to earn profit, companies will develop and invest in new and wondrous ways of producing clean drinking water.
As the exact mechanism for privatisation, we could turn to the Libertarians' Party of New Zealand for inspiration. Their policy is to sell the infrastructure off to private interests and use the proceeds from the sale to buy out pensions, thereby compensating tax victims for their years of indenture. In 10 years' time, we could look back on this time of artificial water shortages and shake our heads in wonder. In 10 years' time, we could look back on this time of artificial water shortages and shake our heads in wonder, just as the citizens of the former East Germany must have done when the shortages of state-controlled commodities like food and automobiles ended with the fall of the Berlin Wall and the return of the means of production to the hands of the productive. Now, from one pleasant thought to another, here's Jennifer.
Thanks, Rick. And don't forget about the Solo Store, which can be accessed by going to www.solopassion.com and clicking the link at the top of the page which says Solo Store. We have a nice selection of items, including our Infidel Gear t-shirts at our Cafe Press store, which allows the wearer to speak out against Islamic fundamentalism and look stylish at the same time. We also have a wide variety of objectivist-oriented books at our Amazon store, including selections like George Reisman's Capitalism. All proceeds from Solo store purchases go directly towards improving site content on Solo, and we would appreciate it if you would take a look and see if any of the items appeal to you.
Thank you, Ms. Limber. That brings us almost to the very end of another Solo Pilot podcast, and closer to Solo Pilot podcast number 4, which is going to be slightly different, hopefully, in order to reflect what's changed on Solo, which you're no doubt aware of. It seems like we're gearing up for something exciting. Starting to put out international press releases, we've got new staff, and a new sort of lease on life. We're not in cruise mode anymore. To find out what mode we are in, tune in next time, because I expect to have some insights by then.
Next time on Solo Pilot.
On our next show, I'm expecting to bring to you at last our interview between Lindsay Perigo and William Waddell. The interview that turned Lindsay Perigo into an objectivist. I'm collaborating with Callum McPetrie on this one, and I expect to have it ready for you soon, provided certain persons provide certain audio samples to us. Anyway, this show's over with now. Special thanks to Duncan Bain for helping me put this one together, and of course, Jennifer Limber. Show notes and links are available on our home site, solopassion.com. A feed has been made available so that you can aggregate Solo Pilot on your iPod or MP3 player of choice. This has been a Solo podcasting production, Alberta, Canada, June 2007. See you next time.